Alrighty, welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast, which is part of the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. I am your host, Noah Rubin. This is episode 73. Today, Ben Pfeiffer is going to join me to talk about the 2024 rookie class, and we might even very briefly preview the 2025 class, which will be a lot more exciting. Let's go ahead and get into it. All right. As I said, we're going to be talking about the 2024 rookie class, which obviously the draft has already happened. We've had Summer League happen, and now we just need to get an idea of, based on all that, what this rookie year is going to look like, who's going to be good long term. I know that this class is very different from some of the other classes, not any true guaranteed superstars, but that's why we're going to bring in a draft expert, Ben Pfeiffer, to talk about the 2024 class. Ben, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. Very excited to talk about the rookies. It's going to be a fascinating rookie class because, unlike last year, where we could kind of pencil in rookie of the year on draft night, can't do that this year, or at least not with any kind of confidence. But
yeah, and before we get into the rookie class, I want to put you on the spot just a little bit, okay. And hope that this is not me like misinterpreting anything, but your Twitter bio has future survivor winner. So I just have to assume that you're a Survivor diehard fan. I have watched the last few seasons. I haven't seen all of them.
No way.
I have friends that I've seen all of them. But I got to ask, what did you think about last season?
It was a really good season. I feel like some of the new era seasons have been kind of hit or miss. But like, it was a good season, good drama, good cast, good winner. Not much complaints. I like Kenzie. I probably would have wanted Charlie to win just because I think he played a little bit of a better game. But, like, you know, I think Kenzie's also one of the best social players in recent memory. But, yeah, I do plan to be on that show. I have applied once, and I am working on applying again. So hopefully, hopefully one day. Yeah. But, yeah, that's awesome. I love it.
That's cool. I got to ask just one more Survivor question, then we'll
please
talk about
do as many as you want.
Maybe we'll just do that the entire episode. Forget about talking about the rookies. But at the beginning of the season, I liked Q, and I enjoyed him for most of the year, or for most of the season, I guess, until he did the thing where he was like,
"Yeah,
I'm going to go home." Then he didn't get voted out. Ended up still making it for a long time. I was like kind of iffy about him after that. How did you feel about Q throughout the season?
I thought the fact that Q like said that he voted for Kenzie just because like she
I think my mic muted for a second. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of lame that he like did the thing where he like voted for Kenzie just because she needed the money more, which I'm like, Kenzie was deserved. I wasn't mad at the outcome, and I'm like, come on, like if you're gonna play the game. But yeah, Q is interesting. I very much enjoyed his presence on the show just because he made it always entertaining. I don't know. I liked Q. I just thought he was kind of like ridiculous. I don't know if you remember Philip, but he's kind of like another like loose cannon type player who reminded me of him. So good TV, I'll say that.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. I hope to see him back on if they do returners. I know, yeah. I was wanting him to
season
win for a while.
50, supposedly.
There we go. And I think that's what I was reading as well on social media. But my wife was very anti-Q the entire time, like just didn't like the way that he was playing. So it was a fun back and forth.
It was certainly polarizing. But I think he added a good antagonist. He certainly made things interesting.
Yeah. And hopefully if they bring him back, we'll get that same vibe with some other returners. I think
I'm sure we will.
Yeah. You mentioned good TV. That's the best way to put it. Whether you like them or not, it'll be entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Oh, yeah. We will talk about basketball now. I'm going to just bring up ESPN's like draft board just so we can have the names there. I don't know how helpful it is. But we'll start by talking about the rookies and how they'll impact this season, because that's valuable in fantasy, like long-term as well as short-term. And there's probably not a ton of them that are going to start this year. If I'm sure you agree with that, but who is a rookie that you think is going to have a very good first year in the league?
Yeah. So I was actually thinking about this last night. If I had the bet, like I said to you before, like, we don't know who the rookie of the year is going to be this year, like we did on draft night last year. Like it was penciled in on July 2023, but I really don't know. But I think my bets would be one of the Kentucky guards, Reed Sheppard and Rob Dillingham, and I think those two are my most likely, just because I think they have the best combination to me of both legit being like top five talents in the class and being in situations where I think they could have a runway to be productive. Like Reed kind of looks to be able to slot in immediately in the Rockets. Like, they don't have the deepest point guard room outside of like Fred and Aaron Holiday's, like, had a pretty good year last year, but isn't that, like, you know, probably isn't something that they'd be like prioritizing over Reed. So wouldn't shock me to see him playing early, especially because of just how good of a shooter and a passer he is. And then Rob, just because the Wolves over the last, like, even like year or two have been so desperate for like juice on the perimeter outside of Ant. Like, Conley is a great creator for others, but like isn't necessarily like the scoring threat or like the three-point shooting threat at this stage in his career that you want. So, and like Monte Morris obviously can't do that. And Nikhil is good, but like a little inconsistent on offense, has always been like that. And is more defensively slanted at this point of his career anyway. So I think Rob is like kind of a totally new dimension for them as someone who's going to have weaknesses, especially on the defensive end. But hey, if there's any defense that can insulate Rob Dillingham, it's the Wolves. It's like, yeah, Rob's probably going to give up stuff on defense, but when you can put him next to Nikhil and Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels and Rudy Gobert, it's probably going to be fine. But I think I think he's going to be getting buckets day one. He's going to be making plays for his teammates from day one. Defense is not going to be good from day one, and some of the interior stuff I think is going to be a work in progress. But I'd say like those two is my most likely. And then I could see Edie just getting the situation bumped. Like, I wasn't as high on Edie as some, but like, it's undeniably a great spot for him to produce. And then I think Modest is another one I like as possible, just because I think another combination of like really talented, I think went too low. And also just like, who the hell knows what the Bulls are going to be like this year. So,
yeah, no, Chicago's definitely going to be very interesting, but we'll start with Reed Sheppard, because I feel like a lot of people, like, the idea is that he's going to be really good. He was obviously really good this summer, and there's a chance that he sees minutes this year. But the idea of him being the backup point guard potentially is something that I guess isn't consensus, that some people may believe, some people may not believe. When I was talking with Tyler Rucker from No Ceilings before the draft, he was saying that certain people he had talked to were saying that NBA teams believe that Reed Sheppard can either be a point guard or he could be a shooting guard. Just kind of depends on the team. But I guess for you, do you think that Reed Sheppard is going to be, like, I guess to start this year, seeing minutes at the two probably as well, but potentially being the backup point guard? Because to me, I was seeing, okay, it's going to be hard for him to get minutes on the wing with Jalen Green, Amen Thompson, Cam Whitmore, Tari Eason, Dylan Brooks, et cetera, like with just how talented they are. But point guard might be a good opportunity for him to play a lot early on.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't in a vacuum want Reed playing the one or think that he's like that level. But I think in Houston, like you said, because of the situation, like, there's just not a lot of competition there, right? Like, Fred is – it's obviously Fred. And if Fred gets hurt, right, it's Aaron Holiday. And then, like, a lot of your great, like, point guard skilled guys on the Rockets are playing other positions. Like, Amen does point guard stuff. Şengün does point guard stuff. And I think having those skill sets on other parts of the floor allow you to play a guy like Reed, who, yeah, he's point guard size and doesn't do point guard things necessarily, but he does other stuff that's really valuable. So I think Houston is like about as good of a situation as you could have asked for, since like they have the defensive wings to insulate him. They have other really nice passers and athletes to, you know, catch passes from him and to help get him the ball. So I do think there's a chance we see him a little bit at the point guard spot. Long term, I probably wouldn't peg him to be like a real on-ball initiator full time. I still see him as more of like a secondary off-ball type player. But I do think this year, like, it would not surprise me. Again, like, Aaron Holiday had a nice year last year, but, like, who knows if he's going to be able to sustain what he did last year, or is he going to regress to being kind of like he has the rest of his career? So, yeah, I think he's got as good of a chance as with any team to be, like, to legit get point guard minutes, where regardless, he's going to get assists, he's going to get steals, like, he's going to hit threes. So I think, like, regardless of what, like, quote-unquote position he plays, he's going to probably be pretty set in all of those areas.
Yeah, it'll be fun to keep an eye on him as rookie year. Like I mentioned, the summer league was fantastic, and Houston just is, there's so much talent there. It'll be fun to see how Ime Udoka kind of
facilitates. Fascinated to see how that group shakes out and if they can make a playoff push in this crazy Western Conference again. So,
yeah, it's getting to be like the end of the fun part of the rebuild. Because obviously everybody likes the winning.
Yeah, but no, it is. I think
that the most fun part is
I forgot that you have Steven Adams too. That's crazy.
Yeah, but it's like all these young guys. It's like they have, you know, superstar potential in the eyes of the fans. Like when, so I'm a Hawks fan. When they had like rookie, I guess it was rookie Okongwu with like second year Cam Reddish, DeAndre Hunter, John Collins, Trae Young. It's like all these guys are, it's like in my mind, because I'm a biased fan, it's like, oh no, we have five future all-stars right here. This is really fun. And it's getting to the end of that for Houston. Yeah. but they have multiple players that have all-star upside. So it's still a ton of fun for them.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, and Şengün's like already a borderline all-star anyway. Yeah. So like, yeah.
Yeah. So I agree with you about Rob being backup point guard, a good bit of instant offense. The defense there is going to help out a ton. And Zach Edey, the situation, I think will be really good. For Edey, the question I think that maybe everyone's asking, or maybe it's just me, but how does he fit in the modern NBA playing defense? Like, do you believe that he's going to be able to move well enough to be effective? Or do you think that that's something that teams are going to try to take advantage of and play him off the floor?
In the regular season, it'll probably be fine. I think in the playoffs, it's going to be a problem, right? Like, he definitely did improve as a mover, and he's a lot better than he was, but still, like, there's a limit when you're that tall, unless your name's Wemby, right? Like, it's just, will exploit that. I think there's some other, like, kind of, like, left on holes in his game. Like, the passing to me is more of a weakness than it kind of got credit for. I know some people think he's going to shoot threes. I would be pretty stunned if that was the case. But hey, Memphis is a great spot for him. He has Ja to set him up. I'm curious, again, like, I feel like people kind of, I don't know, but forget about like how good Clark and, to a lesser extent, like Santi Aldama are. Like, Clark has been a ridiculously good player. He just cannot stay healthy, which was always kind of the issue with Clark, even going back to when he was a prospect. And I think Aldama's quietly been pretty impressive as like a legit 7-footer who can shoot and dribble. And like, you know, if the Grizzlies end up having teams that will, you know, there are going to be certain matchups where against smaller, quicker teams where you just don't want Edey out there as much. So I think, but again, to me, that's like more of a playoff thing as well. I can't really, I don't know. Maybe teams will like really go hard and, you know, we'll see one or two like primetime games or some smart offense like OKC or Boston or whatever. We'll just like scheme the shit out of Edey and make it totally unplayable. I could totally see that happening, but I don't think it'll be like an every game thing in the regular season.
Yeah. And obviously that's just what happens with bigs. I mean, the Rudy Gobert discourse, because of what Luka did to him in the playoffs, like obviously all summer, every podcast, for some reason, you get a former player on there. They're like, yeah, I don't see how Rudy Gobert can be defensive player of the year because he couldn't guard Luka on the perimeter. And it's like, you take 99% of the NBA, they can't guard Luka on the perimeter. Why are we mad that the 7-footer
and Gobert can't? Pretty much did it as well as you can ask for 7-footers.
Right. Man. Yeah.
But yeah. I think like, again, he, like, the thing with Gobert is, like, he's a guy who actually, like, he has the mobility to play, like, on the perimeter and be really good. People just don't give him the credit. Edey is someone who actually, I think, will really struggle when you pull him high up out of the paint. And he's going to be great when you just like park him at the rim, right? And I think having like a Jaren Jackson next to him is going to be really good. And Clark to a lesser extent, like really rangy, more perimeter-based defenders who can like move and cover a lot of ground. Like he needs that. And I think those guys are going to be really helpful. But certain matchups and certain lineups, and hey, like, obviously the Grizzlies are healthy now, but like they have a lot of players who've had pretty serious injury histories at this point. Like Jaren's been injured a good amount in his career. Obviously I talked about Clark, Ja, like, so in a perfect world, like it looks really good, but I do think there are some ways that it can go poorly even then. But that, you know, it's with all rookies pretty much. There's like plenty of ways that it can go poorly. But I do think just for this year, Edie's probably one of the better bets, like to be impactful.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, is there like at least one, but maybe a couple rookies that you are lower on just for this specific season, whether it be that you just don't think they're very good or you think they're more of a long-term project?
Yeah. So I have a couple for different reasons. Like I think Sar and Ron are prospects too. Like I had those guys 1 and 2. I love their talents, but like situation wise and like development wise, where Sar was like, you know, always going to be a long term guy. I think he's going to be great on defense this year, but like I feel like, I guess for fantasy purposes, that's probably not the most useful thing outside of blocks and steals, which he will get, but it's not going to, I don't think it's going to be overwhelming. And then Ron, who I like love his talent and believe, but just like, what the hell is it going to look like in Detroit? Like, I really like Ron. I believe in his shot enough long-term for sure. He's a much better passer and creator than he gets credit for. Obviously just like a freak athlete, motor guy, defense is going to be awesome, but I don't know how it's going to, I just like am not willing to give that Detroit situation the benefit of the doubt anymore. Right. Like I'm just not willing to do it. So fair. It would not surprise me if Ron ended up being really good and people were like, holy shit, like what happens? But it also wouldn't shock me if Ron just like didn't play a ton, or even last year, like Asar, who like had really great moments, but was just like inconsistent in his minutes. And part of that was like Monty, I think, and it's going to get better. And then Castle is probably one who I don't think I'd be very interested in for this year. One, because I'm not a huge fan of the talent. I thought that was a pretty substantial reach. I think it was definitely like the quote unquote like draft Twitter internet people were probably lower on Castle than like the mainstream consensus. Don't think he's a point guard. Absolutely not. Playing with Wemby, he will get the Wemby boost, which I guess could probably saved for any prospect that ended up getting drafted there. But I think Castle's impact is going to be more like little things like cutting and spacing and like defense and like basic passing. I feel like the efficiency in the scoring this year could be like extremely bad. I could see it being really rough this year. And hey, long term, like I like some stuff he does. He's got a great handle. He's pretty strong. He's a pretty good athlete. He can pass. His touch is all right. But This year, I certainly would be kind of surprised if it went well. Like he put up points in summer league, but it was all like 20 points on 21 shots. And he's just not going to get that kind of opportunity, especially when, you know, if Wemby is really like a top 5 player this year, which is possible, like the Spurs aren't going to be as bad as they were last year. Like they're probably not going to make the playoffs, but like it wouldn't shock me if they won 40 games with a top 5 level Wemby, like, and you know, we're the 10th seed in the, like 10th or like a, probably not 10th seed, like the 11th or 12th seed in the West. So that would worry me a little bit for this year. Like that roster just doesn't have a lot of bankable shooting. Like they're only like real shooters. Like they have like Champagne and they have Malachi Branham, who like have a lot of other problems outside of shooting. So yeah, wouldn't love that one for this year.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned it could be 40 wins, and last year it was 46 wins to make the play-in tournament. So you can be really good in the West, and
they're not going to get it. Yeah. But they will. I think there's a good chance. Like, just like if Wemby is already a top 5, like how low can that floor really be if you have a legit top 10 guy in the league? Like, it's most teams with that level of guy aren't bad.
Yeah, and he's unreal. We could probably spend an hour just talking about how unreal he is. But We'll stay with Castle for another minute if you don't mind. They do have Chris Paul play some point guard. Trey Jones is still there. They added Malachi Flynn, who I'm not like too worried about as far as minutes, but sure, Stephon Castle pre-draft, if I'm not mistaken, was telling teams, hey, I'm playing point guard. But you said you don't necessarily believe in him being a point guard, which I think is, you know, kind of interesting because I think he will have opportunities to learn from guys like Chris Paul, Trey Jones, to maybe be more of a playmaker. And we also haven't or have seen the Spurs not be afraid to put players in positions to try and figure out if they are a point guard. Yeah. Example, Jeremy Sochan, which, you know, yeah. So maybe he'll get a few opportunities to do that this year.
He'll certainly get a chance, I think.
Yeah, and it's going to be incredibly inefficient, and he's going to turn the ball over, and he's going to miss shots, and it's going to be a great learning experience. But
right, exactly. But it won't be good for this year's production. I just think like it's I don't know, I'm not going to go well.
Yeah, and Ron Holland
is going to be a worry.
Yeah, it is. And every time he hit a three during summer league with Castle, it was everybody saying, "Oh, see, look, he can shoot" on Twitter, but it's like. Or it was like a video of him doing a shoot around hitting threes. And it's like, okay, like wide open threes in a gym is so
like,
different.
Like it's good. Like I think, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he was an okay shooter in a couple years, but it would be pretty surprising to me if he was like going from a guy who like took very few threes, like people like college defenses just Ben Simmons to him. Right. Like, and he made them pay at times in the tournament, like credit to him. But that's not going to fly. And he wasn't like this crazy shooter in high school either. Like he was a more similar high school player to his UConn stuff than he kind of gets credit for. At least in my opinion, like he wasn't a crazy high volume shooter. Like, he scored in the mid range, solid passer. And I kind of have this worry with like all UConn guys, like to a lesser extent with Klingon. I felt this way last year about Jordan Hawkins, especially that like, they're in most prospects when they go to the league, their like situation in terms of like relative talent and coaching is going to get better. But for UConn guys, it's almost certainly going to get worse, right? Like relative to competition, like unless you're playing for the Boston Celtics or like the Thunder or someone like that, like it's going to be worse. So I worry, like, I think part of Hurley's magic to me is that like he's so damn good at putting guys in positions to succeed and to minimize their weaknesses. And we've seen how good Castle can be as like an off ball wing playing some like four ish rolling post stuff, you know, motion defense. Like we've seen how great that can be. And, you know, maybe the Spurs like really lean into that and use him in that way. I think that would be great if they did. And if that's the case, I'd probably be higher on him for this year. But like you said, based on his pre-draft stuff, where who knows if he was just trying to like force himself to the Spurs because he wanted to play with Wemby, like who knows exactly what he and his camp were doing. But like, if it's genuine, like he views himself as a point guard, and you know that camp is not going to take like being a wing for an answer. I don't know. I think there's going to be serious growing pains there.
Yeah, with Ron Holland, I know you said you love him as a talent. One thing that has me a little bit optimistic is that they brought in Fred Vinson, who was the assistant coach in New Orleans, who worked with Irv Jones, worked with Lonzo, and now he'll help out with Asar Thompson and with Ron Holland. Does that give you more optimism, or were you already, even before that, just kind of like, Ron Holland's going to be good. He's going to figure the shot out. Doesn't matter where he goes, or does that factor into that at all?
I was pretty confident that he figured out regardless. I think it certainly helps it and would boost my confidence. Maybe not year one, because, you know, shot transformations are hard. But yeah, I think these like elite shooting coaches like Vincent and like Englund seems like, from outsider's perspective, like I don't have like crazy intel or anything, but they seem so valuable and the results are so clear. Like, as someone who has covered the Pelicans over like on and off for the last part of 5 or 6 years, basically since Zion got drafted, like it's crazy the way that not only getting guys like, you know, Lonzo to totally rework his shot profile, like Herb Jones, who wasn't a shooter in college, to end up shooting, even like Najee Marshall made improvements, but also just like little fixes in shot profile, which I wonder, like he got Ingram shooting volume catch and shoots and he made an all-star game. And then Ingram has, you know, kind of regressed back to his old habits of not taking as many threes, and he's, you know, not as good as he was when he was confidently shooting. And I, you know, wonder how much of that is Vincent's help, you know, with the mindset changes and all that. But point being, I do think this matters. As much as we can really know from like an outsider as like coaching impact hires, but it seems like Vincent has a pretty real track of substantially improving these guys. And I think the thing with someone like Ron, like Assar and Ron, to me is like they don't have to be great shooters. Like they just have to be good enough to not be sagged off. Both of them are, you know, they're very different players when you like dig into it. But from a macro level, like wings who are ridiculous athletes who can really pass and defend and score on the interior, but struggle to shoot the ball. I think if you can get those guys at just like respectable levels where defenses like have to pay attention, then they're going to be awesome players. So, and I do think like that's a very achievable outcome. That's part of why I was always like optimistic about shooting for like Ron and the Stars. It's like they don't have to be great shooters. Like they just have to be good enough, right? Like you just like, I don't know, get to like, I don't know. I was trying to think of an example of like a shooting parallel, but you know, my point is I think it'll be fine eventually.
Yeah. And I think Assar Thompson's such a funny example of a guy that just literally just can't shoot, but that hopefully we'll be able to figure that out. I knew that kind of, you know, going in,
just because he did make legit like shooting strides his last year at OTE, and I'm like, oh, maybe he'll continue this. Then he just like totally didn't. I'm like, but
I didn't realize how bad it was until I saw people call him Airball Man. I Pistons fans saying, I can't believe we drafted Airball Man. I was like, oh, hold on, I need to go back and look at this and just like rewatch some of these shots. And then I realized, wow, he is shooting a lot of these shots off the backboard. This is really bad.
Yeah, no, it's not great. It's definitely worse than I anticipated, and I feel like for somehow a men's shooting was like a little better or not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Like in pre NBA, it was like a men was like the total non-shooter, and Assar was like taking a lot of mid-range jumpers off the dribble, like, you know, more confident shooting, and then just like both, you know, it's like, and then a men's the one that's like, okay, yeah, he's willing to pull in Assar's like, but. Hopefully Vincent's magic can fix stuff. I hope.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We also had Sar to talk about as guys that may take a little bit of time to figure it out. Obviously, especially on the perimeter with how well he moves, is going to be so valuable when he fully develops. But do you have any concern about him just being anti-center? Because to me, as I said, Hawks fan, when they got the number one pick, I was like, perfect. Trae Young, Alex Sar pick and roll is going to be a ton of fun. He's going to be really good on defense.
Yeah.
And then he said, I don't want to play center. I don't want to work out for Atlanta. Does that concern you at all that he just doesn't want to play center? Or are you like, cool, he's still going to be really good and he's just going to play power forward?
Oh, it certainly concerns me. I think my hope is that at some point within the next year, he kind of gets a reality check and it's like, you're not a wing. You are like, what makes you special is the centered stuff you do on, especially on the defensive end. I think it'll probably be easier for Sar to like get stronger than to totally rework his game. Like Sar is not a good offensive player now, and his offensive projection was always kind of long term, but he is like freaky handler mover for his size, and if he can get stronger, like it's easier for me to envision him being like a guy who's a total mismatch at the five. Like we see a ton of these like skinnier traditional 7-footers nowadays who are complete mismatches at the five because slower footed, you know, more traditional bigs can't hang with them. And I think we even saw that in the NBL. Like Sar was able to beat bigs off the dribble. And that was kind of the really good stuff, but it wasn't like running pick and rolls or isolating. It was like dribble handoffs and occasional, you know, like closeout attacking stuff. But I do think the physicality is certainly a worry, where it's not as much like, I don't want to play center. It's like, to me, it's like, I don't want to play on the interior, which is not good because he's not nearly a good enough shooter. Like he shot the ball well on like off dribble jumpers last year, but this sample was really small. Like I think his touch is pretty good, but I certainly wouldn't like him long term at the four. Hopefully Valanciunas can help him become, because I feel like Valanciunas has so many of the skills that he needs, like whether it's like the strength and the physicality and the rebounding and just the ability to like carve out space and use his body. Valanciunas has always been great at that while also being a shooter, right? So hopefully Sarr can kind of learn some of that. And I do think, like, while I don't love Sarr at the four, I do think him playing like Valanciunas is like as ideal a center partner as you can kind of find. Just as like a big physical guy who's going to get rebounds. And also like Valanciunas is a pretty rough defender, and I think Sarr will theoretically be able to help him on that end. So I think the offense kind of regardless of mentality or fit is going to be like probably not great in year one, unless the threes just go in at like a crazy rate, which I, you know, who knows, but I probably wouldn't bet on that. He's never really shot the ball high volume efficiency anywhere. Like there's enough flashes to believe that he could be a good shooter down the line, but it just hasn't happened yet. So I wouldn't probably bank on Sarr this year. But like I said, I think the defense is going to be pretty good right away. Or at least, you know, the flashes are going to be really impressive. And I would guess like at some point in the year, he settles in and is pretty good on defense, but that's harder to quantify, obviously.
Definitely. And we've talked about a lot of the guys that have gone or that went early in the draft, but we haven't talked about number one overall pick. So I do want to hear your thoughts about Zachary Brisechet, who, like, whether or not you think he starts year one, and what kinds of things you think he'll do well or struggle with early on.
Yeah. You know, not my favorite number one pick in the world.
No,
I feel like that was kind of the, I don't know, like even in this class, I think there were quite a few options I would have preferred, but it, you know, it makes sense. The Hawks are clearly just going for like wings around Trey, which fair enough, I guess. But yeah, I don't know how much I would expect Risa Share to really do year one, just because I think there's a lot of rawness in terms of like physicality and decision making and stuff like that that might hurt. Well, like he's going to be a good shooter. He's going to hit threes. I'm pretty confident in that. But he's another one that I could see really struggling on the interior. Just like really struggles physically, isn't always willing to, you know, go downhill and be forceful. Like he can get up in like the hat in the open floor. Like he can dunk in transition, and every once in a while he'll get up and make a play. And he has some nice moments in summer league, like creating and stuff. But I probably wouldn't bank on any of that. Just not going to be someone who I can realistically see getting any kind of significant volume, which mm-hmm. obviously is going to be an issue for production this year and for fantasy, I'd imagine. Like,
yeah,
I'd say he's going to play, he's going to space the floor, he'll cut, he'll finish shots at the rim sometimes, he'll get rebounds, he'll get some steals, but I wouldn't bank on him to be like a real guy this year. And that was always like my thing with the pick. Like, respectfully, the Hawks are not a Risa Share type away from being a contender.
Right.
The whole, like, you know, we have to take this guy because we want to be good. It's like, well, you still need quite a few other pieces, and you still need time for, like, I think Jalen Johnson is going to be awesome. Like, I still have some Okongwu belief. Like, I think it's worth seeing what Kobe Bufkin can turn into. Like, I mm-hmm. really like. And I think that, like, wing-ish room is quietly kind of crowded. Obviously, you have like Hunter and Jalen Johnson there, but like who knows? Like Dyson can play on the wing. Maybe Bufkin takes a step and they have to play him more. Bogdan is still there, and obviously we saw what he did in the Olympics. He's awesome. Like I think did they sign David Roddy or did they get David Roddy? I think so.
They did get David Roddy.
Probably just going to be a depth piece, but who knows? Maybe
right.
More bodies in that wing room to potentially take reps away from Risa Share. And the fact that he's the number one pick probably means that like he's just going to get a certain level of priority because that's just mm-hmm. how teams work generally. But certainly, as number one picks go, I wouldn't be super confident in what he can do this year. Though I do think long term he can definitely be a solid player on the wing. Definitely. He has the tools to be a useful two-way player, absolutely. But this year, I probably wouldn't say like he's like a lock NBA ready guy.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, there is a few guys in the wing. I would imagine that Dyson Daniels starts the two with Bogey back to his sixth man role, but DeAndre Hunter is still there. Like he's probably not considered a high upside player anymore just because he's already been in the league like, what, 5 years and just hasn't taken any steps since like year two. But yeah, he's still a valuable wing player that they're paying good money. So that could certainly impact how much Ricochet plays. Like maybe
and he's Sadiq still starting because he's number one pick, right?
No, he's in Washington now.
Right, right. Damn, I forgot about that. That's crazy.
But he's also because he's also hurt. That's partially I think why they let him walk, but
probably, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. After they traded 5 seconds to get him, because that's what teams do now is they trade 5 second rounders when they want somebody. So that's
I certainly have questioned plenty of the Hawks front office decisions over the last 5 or 6 years, but who knows? I love Trey, so hopefully, and I hope this one goes well for them. They've got a cool roster, even if it's not going to be great this year, probably. But
yeah, it'll be fun. But like I said, we've talked a lot about the early guys. I'm just going to slide this down. Who is somebody outside the lottery that you're pretty high on, whether it be for this year or long term?
Sure. So, I guess I can start with for this year. I think one that I've seen people talk about and I agree with is Khalil Ware, who I thought went way too low. I had him as like an easy top 10 grade on my boards and stuff pre-draft. And then he lands in fucking Miami. Like it's like he's like, it's like, oh no. Like he's a guy who I think could legit get minutes. Cause I mean, outside of Bam, like this is going to be the thing forever. Like the Heat have been rotating through like Yurtseven, and like I'm a big Orlando Robinson guy, but like they never wanted to play him, and like old ass Kevin Love. So if Khalil Ware really is able to hold up early, and I do have some, you know, notable questions about like the motor and some of the defensive awareness stuff, and just like the feel on both ends, but he's like a crazy athlete who can possibly really shoot. And I trust Miami more than
exactly,
you know, almost any other org to get the most out of him. So like would not shock me at all if he was as awesome this year. Jalen Tyson in Cleveland is another one that I just loved. I think in my pre-draft mock, that was one of like 4 picks I got right. Just because it felt like such a perfect fit. Like the Cavs so desperately needed like wings who could do stuff on offense. That was one of their fatal flaws in the playoffs these last couple years. And Tyson is a wing who can do stuff on offense. Like he's not a perfect prospect by any mean, but he's a legit like dribble pass sometimes and shoot wing. He's going to be useful. I think he was, you know, incredible in summer league, which isn't surprising at all to me, as he was like the high usage creator for a college, you know, a Pac-12 team. And now he's going to be asked to what, like attack closeouts, do stuff off of the bench. He's really, really talented, and he's on a team that really needs his skill set. So that's one that I think could be good this year. Oh, I'm looking at this and I'm so sad about Deron, man. That would have been another one that's just like would have been so awesome. And I hopefully still will be as well. I'm very intrigued about Eve Misi's situation. I think I was probably like literally the highest of anyone on Misi, based on like the draft Twitter consensus boards that roll around at the time. But even I wouldn't want him starting at center for a team, let alone a good team that's trying to make the playoffs. And the Pelicans have what they have Tice at center. They signed some overseas guy whose name I can't remember at the moment. But like he has all of the runway in the world to like be their starting five, and they kind of desperately need a guy with his skill set. The Pelicans have had a problem like ever since AD left with like paint defense and rim protection, especially like when you have Ingram and Zion and Valanciunas as your front court, you're gonna get scored on at the hoop, and they got scored on a lot at the rim last year. So yeah, you know, Misi's not a spacer. Maybe that'll conflict with Zion. He's got a lot of work in terms of like feel and positioning stuff, but he is a ridiculous athlete who's strong as hell, explosive, has the potential in my eyes to be a legitimate three-level pick and roll defender, as well as some like interesting offensive stuff with his ball handling. So he's one that like I expect it to probably not be great, just because he's a project for sure. Even if I think he's an extremely high ceiling one, he's probably gonna take time. But like, what the hell are the Pelicans going to do at center? Like, they were going to try to trade Ingram for someone, and then nobody wanted to trade for Ingram. I have no idea what they're going to do. But it's, I mean, I'm excited for a lot of Misi, which we're probably going to get, but I don't know how good it's going to be for him and for them this year. Even if I do think he'll like be better than Jackson Hayes was for them a couple of years ago, like, is it
right?
Like, that's a very, very, very low bar. So those are the three that pops my mind immediately. And then I think like McCain connects, like De Silva, all these like shooters on good teams, like,
right?
As well as just like can see the pathways to them being good and playing, right? Like they shoot threes and they play on playoff teams.
Yeah, and that's valuable. And with Misi, I think you're right. He is a guy that's going to have certain issues fitting into the team. I think the spacing one is the main concern that I have, but just the fact that he might be a guy that has issues, or the team has issues with him and Zion trying to share the floor, but might still actually end up being pretty good in fantasy just because he is the only center option, really. I mean, unless they really want to give Daniel Tice 25 minutes a game, but I can't imagine they do.
And, like, the Pelicans have spacing issues on Zion like forever, so like they're clearly they're clearly not afraid to like trot out lineups like that don't have shooters. Like, they were playing, you know, they play like Valanciunas and Zion and Naji Marshall and Herb Jones. Like, yeah, like none of these guys are really shooters. Even Valanciunas, like, is an efficient 3-point shooter. I don't really think of him as a spacer because he doesn't take a lot of threes. Like, he takes like one three a game. Except for that one game where he made like 8 threes. Do you remember that? was that like 2 years ago?
I was about to bring that up. Oh gosh, I don't remember.
It's like if Valanciunas could do that, he'd be legitimately awesome. But he's so good. But right, like the Pelicans have made this thing work with very suboptimal spacing. Like, I think like Ingram's willingness to shoot has been a problem. I am worried about DeJounte there in terms of like willingness to space and play off of the ball. I'm very concerned about that fit. Like, so yes, I think like Misi is an obstacle there in terms of spacing, but the Pelicans are like have shown a willingness to work through that. So I don't think that would like be the thing that doesn't allow Misi to play, basically. Like he wouldn't play if he's bad, which is very possible. He's a rookie big. Yeah. Kind of how it goes. Being a center in the NBA is really hard. It's really hard to play center in the league, but I think there's a chance that Misi is like, you know, he does stuff in terms of rim protection that's just like immediately so valuable that they're willing to push through the kind of crappy parts immediately. So that's probably the one I'm just like most fascinated to see how it goes. Like, I don't know what's gonna happen, but like, it could be good. I don't know.
Yeah. And then one more guy I want to ask you about, because he's one of my favorite late round picks heading into the draft. And then I'm pretty happy with where he landed, is Ryan Dunn, who I think like Phoenix needed another guy that can play really good defense that way. You know, they're not relying on KD, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal to be their best defender. And I think Josh Okogie was able to do that in spurts in like last year and the year before, but obviously wasn't able to kind of carve out a consistent role. But I think Ryan Dunn may be able to do that as a rookie. I think it does play well for fantasy because he has this unreal block rate, but he's also just going to be a valuable defender that hopefully isn't too much of an offensive liability. I'm not encouraged by summer league, but what do you think about him as a really good defender and arguably like one of the worst offensive players that was drafted?
I think that's spot on. I would say I agree with you that like for like from a fantasy perspective, like he's gonna get a shitload of blocks and steals. Like he's like if Thybul wasn't a gimmick on defense. Like, that's how I think about how crazy his like defensive playmaking is. Like, he gets all the blocks and the steals, but he's actually good outside of that. Like, it's not the only thing he does. He's truly like aside from, you know, maybe like Sar or Ron upside wise, was like easily the best defender in the class. Or like today, he's so far and away the best defender from that class. I agree with you. Phoenix so desperately needs interior defense. Like, they're trotting out like Nurkic and Eubanks. And, you know, what the hell are you going to do when teams drive at you, right? Like, you know, you're asking, you know, 36-year-old Kevin Durant or whatever to be your primary rim defender at times. And like, he can do it still because he's fucking Kevin Durant. Like, you don't want that. Like, you don't want to have to rely on that. I honestly like both of their picks. I liked Dunn. I liked Oso as well, just because I think they're both like skill sets that team needs, and just because like the Suns have no fucking depth. It's like, okay, yeah, these guys could actually play. This newfangled Suns approach of caring about the draft. We'll see if it works out. But yeah, I like that as like a potential, like he's going to get blocks, he's going to get steals. I think the offense is going to be unplayably bad for sure as a rookie, but like in the regular season, he'll probably play some, I think. Like I would not want to rely on him in the playoffs, because I think like we've seen what could happen with a guy like Jared Vanderbilt, who will chase Steph Curry around screens as a 6'8 guy, and then just won't play for games at a time because he's so bad on offense. And I think Dunn is like that kind of guy, even if it's not going to look the same, where it's like, yeah, maybe he'll have some matchups in games where like he will swing a game or a series. But then there's going to be like probably the majority, especially early in his career, where it's like our offense can't do shit with him out there. So I would certainly have like tempered expectations because of that. But defensively, I think you can kind of be as high as you want, because he's going to be incredible. Like, I, you know, don't think anyone really has many questions about that, understandably so. And Phoenix, like you said, is a really good spot for his skill set. Like, desperately need a guy like Ryan Dunn, and he'll, just because of that, he'll probably play. Like, it's not going to get worse than like having, you know, like Bol Bol and like the other, like Eubanks and the other bigs they had out there, right?
Yeah. Can't be much worse than that.
But it can't be worse. Like, can't be worse.
Yeah, it was bad last year. But we will move on to talking about the 2025 draft, where I'm basically just going to kind of let you talk about it, because I haven't done a ton of prep for it yet. I'm gonna actually take this off the screen and then pull up the 2025. But I know Cooper Flagg, I know Ace Bailey, I know a couple other names. But yeah, can you tell me a little bit more about?
That's probably everyone else. I think it's probably everyone relevant for 2024, at least, that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
But yeah, 2025, amazing draft, at least compared to this year. Cooper Flagg, like you said, is a very special prospect that he's going to be the number one pick. Like, it's the same kind of thing where, to me, I think, because you know, there's some people who are like, they think Ace Bailey is better, or they think he's overrated or whatever. But in my opinion, it's going to be like Zion, where he plays his first game and everyone's going to be like, ah, okay, I see how this is going to go. Where Zion had that first game against Kentucky, and it was like, okay, I see how this is going to go. Because, you know, there are people who like thought RJ was better, thought Cam Reddish was better, and it's like, was better.
But I do think that there are plenty of other great prospects in this class. I mean, I'll say Cooper is like the best pre-college defender I've ever seen, and he can really shoot and pass. Like, yeah, he's not the greatest creator at the moment, but like, he's a godly athlete who's really smart and can shoot. Like, why would you not bet on that guy to improve his offensive skill, right? So Cooper is ridiculous. I can just like go down the tankathon list if you want.
Please go for it.
Is a very good prospect that I think has been a little bit overhyped. I think he's a bit more flawed than some of the other guys in this class. Like, he is 6'8 and an incredibly smooth shot maker, and that's valuable, right? Like, he's an awesome scorer from the perimeter, and he's really tall and fluid, but he's not that like crazy of an athlete. Explosion wise, like, he can definitely get like struggle against quicker and stronger defenders. His decision making and like some of the playmaking is really questionable. And then defensively, it's like, who the hell knows, because like, he just like played center for his high school team and sat in the paint. But the feel seems like behind. I think Dylan Harper is going to be like the obvious star of that Rutgers team, and Ace is going to be really good and going to have flashes, but it's going to struggle a bit more. I just think the ceiling, because like, I think to me, the things that really like impact your ceiling are like these special outlier traits that, you know, and that I just don't think Ace really has, except for maybe the shooting, like, which he is tall and a crazy shooter. And I still think Ace is great. Like, I still think he's a clear like top 7-8 guy in this class, which is like very stacked. So I don't think it's as much about me being lower on Ace. It's more of like, there's so many other guys like Dylan Harper, his teammate, and Traore, honestly. Like, I think Traore. So, for me, the next tier of guys after Cooper are Harper and Traore, and then Rocco Zakarski, who they have at 11. That's going to be higher. And then Kasperis Jakusconis, who I don't even know if they have on here, but he's going to be in mainstream mocks because he like destroyed the international youth tournaments. Mm. They don't even have him on Takeathon. He's a Lithuanian point guard. He played for Barcelona in the Adidas youth tournament, and he played for Lithuania at U18 Eurobasket, and he just dominated. He's one of these pull-up shooting plus passing guys, right? That's a great combination. But Harper and Traore are also just phenomenal. Harper is built like a brick wall. I was listening to a podcast. What was it? It was the Draft Council podcast that my friends Dan and Ahmed do, where I think they said that Harper weighed in at 6'6", 238 at a camp earlier this year, which is unfathomable. Which is he's Miles Garrett built. He's playing point guard. I think Harper might not have the pure initiator creation ceiling of a guy like Traore or Vijay Edgecombe or Jakusconis, but he's not a guy who I think is going to be creating paint touches from a standstill, but he's an amazing handler. He's so physical and strong. He's a crazy good passer. He can really shoot off the dribble, and his defense is pretty much better than all of the other initiator guards in the class. So Harper to me is, outside of Cooper, maybe the safest guy in this whole class. I would be stunned if he's not at least a good player. And if he ends up, being a really elite shooter, or the playmaking is really elite, or he leans into the strength creation because he is just so freakishly strong, that it could be really great. And Traore is kind of opposite, where he's a walking paint touch. He has special burst and acceleration, gets downhill whenever he wants, is a really nice passer as well. Certainly raw, where raw in ways that Harper really isn't. Traore is very raw in his pacing and decision making on the ball at times. He clearly has vision and can make some high level plays, but it's not super consistent. The jumper isn't great, but he has all of the tools you look for in one of these star level initiator point guard types. So that's my those are my really top guys. Oh, and I guess I'll quickly mention Rocco Zakarski, who is a center who plays in the NBL. Last year, he only played limited minutes for Brisbane. He was playing backup third string center to a team that started Aaron Baines, which I think is funny. but he's just every bit of 7'3" and a godly mover. Like we talked about earlier, how Edie is going to struggle because he can't play on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. Rocco was moving on the perimeter as a 17-year-old. And though he didn't play a ton, he was obscenely productive on a per minute basis, especially on defense, where I think he had 12 block rate. I'm pretty sure it was the highest block rate in the NBL last year. It was something absolutely disgusting. And not a crazy offensive player, has solid touch, can dunk and set screens. It's not going to be anything crazy, but when you're that level of defensive anchor, where I think he can be a defensive player of the year level guy, or at least someone who's on all defense teams year in and year out, that's a guy you take high, even if they're not great on offense. But then those are just the real top guys to me. But even the other guys on this list, I can still talk about. Edgecombe, I'm a little bit lower on than some, just because I worry about the offense, and he's not 6'5". He's 6'2", 6'3", without shoes. He's just a special athlete, a really special athlete who can shoot. Liam McNeely is an awesome shooter. Common Malawash is super raw, but a crazy athlete talent. It's a crazy class. It's so nuts.
Yeah. And that was awesome for me to get a little, I guess, preview of the class. So that was
great. If you have any questions or specific guys, but that was just me word vomiting of a bunch of the guys that I like at the top of the class.
No, that was great. To get that, I'm not going to ask you to continue to just, because I know you can't. I'm not going to question that.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, and later on, maybe we'll bring you back on, and sure, we will talk about the class as we get closer to the draft. That's going to do it. Ben, is there any content that you have coming up that we can preview that everyone should kind of check out and just be also make sure you follow him on Twitter at BJPF underscore.
Yeah, just follow my Twitter. Basically everything I do will be on there. Definitely have some fun stuff continued on my YouTube, more throwback scouting stuff. And I will be continuing to do 2025 draft stuff as, you know, it gets closer. But yeah, that's about it. Catch my writing and my YouTube. Everything will be on my Twitter. So just follow me there. But yeah, thanks for having me on. Enjoy talking prospects. Like I said to you off air before, I always like the fantasy stuff because I'm really bad at it and I think it's fascinating.
Yeah. The numbers are always kind of iffy. I mean, usually it translates pretty well where it's like good basketball players are good in fantasy, but then there's always a few that just doesn't translate. But it's always about making those, I guess, certain decisions that also when you talk about it with content and stuff, it pisses some people off that are fans of teams.
For sure.
You know, it's fun. But yeah, thank you so much for joining me. That is going to do it for this episode of the Tank Me Later podcast, and I will see you next time.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.